WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Nobel Peace Prize was awarded today to the international campaign to ban landmines for working for the banning and clearing of anti-personnel mines. These mines are triggered by the weight of a footstep. They remain hidden, killing civilians long after a war has ended. An estimated 26,000 people a year are killed or maimed by anti-personnel mines. The United States is one of the countries that has not agreed to sign a treaty banning these mines. On this archive edition, we're going to hear from a war surgeon who has treated hundreds of landmine victims. Dr. Chris Yanu is medical director for the Red Cross's campaign against anti-personnel mines, which is, by the way, not affiliated with the group that won the Nobel. Dr. Yanu has treated the victims of war in Cambodia, Lebanon, Burundi, Afghanistan, and Somalia. I spoke with him in 1996 and asked him to describe the typical injuries caused by landmines.
There are two particular types of anti-personnel mines. The one is called a blast mine, and this is the sort of mine that is detonated when somebody steps on it. So there's a pressure sort of triggering mechanism, and you get an explosion. Now, the explosion causes a very rapid expansion of air through heat, and this will tear off somebody's leg. It creates what is called a traumatic amputation. Depending on the size of the explosive charge and whether the victim is a child or an adult, you may have the foot, the leg below the knee, the leg above the knee, simply blown away. Secondarily, you will have fragments, either from the casing of the mine, gravel, grass, soil, from the surrounding earth that is pushed up into the stump of what is left of the leg, or into the opposite leg, into the buttocks, the genitalia. I even operated on one fellow once who had a wound in the chest wall, in the muscles of the chest. And as I was cutting this out, I found pieces from the bones of his foot. So the foot that was pulverized by the explosion created secondary fragments, which were the bones of the foot, and these injured the victim in the muscles of the chest wall. The second type of anti-personnel mine is a fragmentation device. And this could be similar to a what looks like a hand grenade. It gives off small pieces of metal fragments, and they can be either directional and therefore cover a certain arc, or they can spread out over 360 degrees in a circle. And the injury there resembles very much what one would see with any sort of injury resulting from a mortar shell or a hand grenade. The body is peppered with multiple fragments of metal. Depending on the distance of the victim from the mine at the time of explosion, those fragments will either tear the body to shreds, penetrate more or less profoundly, injure or kill. The blast type of mine usually does not kill. There's usually not enough explosive substance in the mine to kill. It's almost purposely made to maim and not to kill.
Where did you treat the most landmine injuries during your career?
Well, I've worked both in Cambodia and in Afghanistan, and as well as in Somalia twice. Cambodia and Afghanistan are probably two of the countries in the world that have been most infested with anti-personnel mines. I spent about 8-9 months in both countries, 1991 in Cambodia, 1993 in Afghanistan. And we had hundreds of patients over the months that I was there that were maimed, wounded by anti-personnel mines.
Are injuries from anti-personnel mines particularly hard to treat?
They're very difficult to treat. They're particularly horrific, especially the blast mines. You not only have this traumatic amputation, a limb being literally torn away, you have a great deal of soiling. The blast, as I said, picks up gravel and grass and soil and so forth and pushes it up between the layers of the muscles. It's particularly difficult for the inexperienced surgeon to operate, in that the level of injury is actually much greater than what meets the naked eye to begin with. And you have to understand the pathological mechanism so that when you operate, you're transforming this dirty, contaminated, traumatic amputation into a clean surgical amputation. You have to cut far enough up while at the same time trying to preserve as much as possible of the still healthy tissues. And if you don't know to look between the muscles in what is called the tissue planes, then you may very well miss it. If you do, then you're going to leave contaminated, very often contaminated organic material behind. And that is a recipe for gas gangrene or tetanus. So it can be very difficult. They're particularly horrific wounds. I have colleagues who have told me that when they're called in for an emergency case, they almost pray that it be a bullet injury or a fragment, a shell wound, not a mine injury. To see almost every mine injury that comes in, a blast mine injury, where the patient is disfigured. They're missing a foot, a leg, if somebody has picked it up, or the deminers, the people who try to do mine clearance. And sometimes they're not professional. They're peasants who have to grow food to feed their families. And therefore they'll go out into their rice paddies or their fields, and they will try to clear out the mines themselves. And they will lose a hand, both hands, be injured in the face, lose their vision. These are wounds that cause unnecessary suffering, superfluous injury, and very, very horrific disfiguring injuries.
Do you often find that by the time somebody gets to the hospital, their wounds is already infected?
Very often. In many of these countries, and here it depends on many factors of geography and so forth, all war wounds are, by definition, dirty and contaminated. Now, if the patient takes 3 days, a couple of weeks, to finally reach a hospital, that was very, very often the case in a country like Somalia. In Afghanistan, also, with mountains and difficulty in transportation, you will often receive patients after 3 or 4 days, time of injury. Cambodia was a bit better. The average transportation time was between 6 to 12 hours. But people will arrive with not only contaminated wood, but established infection. And we know also from our database that mine-injured patients undergo multiple operations. On the average, in war surgery, somebody was hit with a bullet. On the average, you're going to have 2 operations per patient. With mine injuries, the average is 3 to 4 operations. And if it's a mine-induced amputation, you get 4, 5, even 6 amputations or operations, because you have to keep cutting out the infected material, the devitalized material. We know that with blood transfusions as well, people who are injured with mines need 3 to 4 times as much blood.
Would you say that most of the victims of landmines that you've treated were intended victims, even if they were civilians? Is this part of the civilian population that was targeted by the people who laid the mines?
The antipersonal mines have been used in very indiscriminate ways. So that very often what obviously was intended was waging war against, yes, the civilian population. But even if you do not use the mine in an indiscriminate way, the mine by its very nature is an indiscriminate weapon. Just think of it. The only weapon system that exists where it is the victim that detonates the weapon is a mine. There is no soldier squeezing a trigger, pushing a button. The mine is put out in the fields, in the mountains, on the riverbanks. It is the victim, and whether that victim is military, civilian, a woman, a child, a peasant, the mine by its very nature is indiscriminate. Whether there is an ongoing conflict, a ceasefire. In Central America, you have countries that knew 10 years of war in the 1980s. There is now a peace process, democratic elections, and yet there are still people falling victim to anti-personnel mines. In North Africa, in Egypt, You have mines left over from the Second World War. Rommel and the Afrika Korps and Field Marshal Montgomery. And 50 years later, you have victims to landmines. And therefore, the whole problem with anti-personnel mines is that already they cannot be targeted, since it is the victim who is going to set it off. And as a result, this is one of the major reasons that the mere existence and the use of anti-personnel mines goes contrary to some very basic fundamental principles of international humanitarian law.
Now, you worked for a while in Cambodia, which has an enormous number of landmines, though I couldn't tell you exactly how many.
they estimated it between 8 to 10 million.
Wow. So did you have to be very careful all the time where you walked, or did you know where the minefields were?
Well, the areas where we could go were very circumscribed. I was there in 1991, even before the ceasefire. Since then, you had a United Nations mission and elections and so forth. But I was there before the ceasefire, and we were very, very close to the front lines, only a question of about 15, 20 miles. So even the areas where we could go at the time were very circumscribed. And then we were always told, as a matter of security, I mean, we usually rode bicycles around the village where we were working. Nonetheless, we were not allowed to go off into the fields. Small plastic water-resistant mines will be carried downstream of a river. And so even if the people tell you this area is safe, they go there every day to water their livestock, or they go to fetch water, or to do their laundry, or what have you. The next day, a mine could float downstream. And I remember well in Somalia, in 1992, in the city of Beletwain, where I was working at one point, in the middle of the town, a girl would go every day to the river to fetch water for her home. And she would go to the same spot. And one day she went down and she stepped on a mine. Now, Beletwain is about 40 kilometers from the Ethiopian border. There had been a war between Ethiopia and Somalia back in 77, 78. It rains in the mountains in Ethiopia. And here was a small, plastic, water-resistant mine that was washed down the mountain slope, into the riverbed, downstream, and landed on the banks of this town where this young girl would go down every day to the same spot, she thought in perfect safety, until one day there was a landmine waiting there for her.
Did you treat her?
I operated on her. I had to amputate her, yes.
What was the outcome?
She had an amputation below the knee. She survived the amputation, but it's not the easiest sort of thing to have to live with in a country like Somalia, which at the time was facing a horrendous famine as well.
The International Committee of the Red Cross has been keeping a data bank of the injuries that it treats at its war hospitals around the world. What have you learned from those data banks about anti-personnel mine injuries?
As I mentioned before, the extraordinary amount of work, the extra number of operations, the extra amount of blood that is needed for anti-personnel mine injuries. Let me give you an example. To treat 100 patients injured by assault rifles, bullet wounds, you need an average of 50 units of blood. Now, some cases are going to use several units. Many cases will not need any blood. But the average for treating 100 patients is 50 units of blood. To treat 100 mine-injured patients, you need 120 units, more than twice as much. To treat 100 people amputated because of landmines, you need 350 units. That's seven times as much blood. In many countries of the Third World, providing that blood in a safe and secure fashion is difficult because of the presence of various transmissible diseases, HIV, syphilis, malaria, hepatitis. All of that increases, obviously, the amount of work that is done. Hospitalization time. Most patients with a fragment wound or a bullet wound will leave the hospital after 14 or 15 days. A landmine victim, the average hospital stay is 25 days. And for a landmine amputee, it's 35 days. These are the sort of things that one sees, and from analyzing our database, And it reinforces, of course, our own personal experience. I've had to operate on hundreds of landmine injured amongst thousands of patients. And for all of the statistical data that my analysis of our database gives me, I have numerous personal anecdotes of cases that I've had to treat that symbolize and signify the human reality of the suffering of these weapons.
Dr. Chris Yonu is a war surgeon and the director of the Red Cross's campaign against anti-personnel mines. Our interview was recorded last year. Another group, the International Campaign to Ban Landmines, won the Nobel Peace Prize today.